Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Amber, and I'm here today with Steve.
Hello, everyone.
And Chris.
I'm here too. Hi, everybody.
And this is episode number 126. So if you are tuning in and you would like to access show notes or a full transcript, you can find those at accessibilitycraft.com/126. Now, we always start every episode with a beverage, and Chris is going to introduce our beverage in a minute, but I'm going to tell you just as a little throwback, because at the end of our last episode, if you haven't listened, you should go listen. We tried for the first time ever a drink that called Mary Jones that included some, what was it? THC. After my like three or four sips, but about 20 minutes after the episode, oh, I could feel it. I did not like it. So I'm very excited about today's beverage, which is more in my comfort zone of not being.
Yeah, not freaking out. Amber was freaking out, right?
I don't know if I was freaking out, but I had never felt like that. And also, we did it in the middle of the day, and I had a whole bunch of plans for things I needed to get done in my Friday afternoon. Yeah. And then I got on a meeting with Steve, and Steve's like, all you said was, uh-huh. So what are we drinking today that will not ruin Amber's Friday afternoon productivity, Chris?
Well, fun fact, not is even in the name. It's not beer, and the funny thing is, it kind of looks like it could be a beer. I'm guessing that's intentional, but we got a red, white, and blue can here. Kind of looks like a rocket pop, if you're familiar with the classic popsicle.
Bomb pops. So it's horizontal stripes with red on the top, white in the middle, and a very light blue on the bottom of the can.
Yeah.
But I like their beverage marketing copy, so I'm just going to read this. You love America, but have you ever tasted it? Lucky for you, we canned it. A little sweet, a little citrusy, and a whole lot of America in every red, white, and blue can.
So we are gearing up for the 4th of July here in the USA, and we are going to be drinking some American not beer, although I think this episode might come out after the 4th of July, but Still, July is when we celebrate our country. Yeah. So we're doing it with this, but it's not beer. What is it?
It's a sparkling, unsweetened beverage with some raspberry and citrus flavors. Zero calories, zero sugar, no sweeteners, and they put a little bit of Himalayan salt in it, too, to balance out the flavors. So hopefully it's not salty water. We'll see. But I'm going to open mine up here, and we can give these
a taste. Unlike Amber's last drink, this one says, never a bad time.
Yes.
Never a bad time.
Yes. You know, this made me think about actually was when we did Liquid Death. And I think we did an iced tea from Liquid Death, but they started with water. And when I had read the backstory of those is it was created by rock musicians who they would go to these concerts and they kept being expected to drink something like energy drinks. And they're like, I'm so sick of drinking these energy drinks. I just want water. But it wasn't cool to be drinking water, so they invented Liquid Death so that they could have like metal water. And this is what this makes me think of, because this can, it legit looks like a beer. Like the fonts they've chosen, the design of the label, like it looks like what I think of as like what your dad or your grandpa would drink, but it's water.
And it's in a tall boy.
How is it? You guys have tasted it? Yeah, how's it smell?
It's good.
It's very cherry forward on the nose. That's what I'm smelling.
Ooh.
But it does have that rocket pop kind of.
You guys both call them rocket pops? I call them bomb pops.
What do you call them, bomb pops?
That's what I grew up calling them.
I always called them rocket pops.
Yeah, bomb pops.
Maybe it's a trademark thing. Maybe it's, you know, Kleenex and Windex, right?
Oh, yeah. Like one of them is a brand.
Yeah. Maybe Amber's family bought the off-brand ones.
It tastes good. I'm kind of on the fence about cherry things sometimes.
Well, sometimes they're called firecracker popsicles too. I think it's a branding thing. There's bomb and rocket and firecracker.
Yeah. It's very refreshing. Like the flavoring is not too subtle. It's also not too much. I feel like they're just very much walking the middle of the road, and it's not salty. So yeah. I was a little worried when they said they put Himalayan pink salt in it, that it would be salty.
So but, is cherry what you guys both taste in this?
It's more, it's mostly cherry and like a little lime. It almost makes me think of if you go to Sonic and get like a cherry limeade, it's just like that without the sugar.
Yeah. So there's zero sugar. It's not, but it also doesn't have fake sugar. So it is not sweet. It's sparkling water, but it's flavored.
It's not very, and it's not overly carbonated either.
So I think it tastes like it's got a cherry limeade flavor, which throwback to one of our first episodes ever. We did the Hello Kitty cherry limeade pop. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so sweet. I can't handle that. I will drink more than 3 or 4 sips of this during this episode. So I give it a thumbs up and I will still be productive this afternoon.
I give it a thumbs up. It's good. I like it.
Yeah, same. I would get this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm thinking like, this is nice flavor and stuff without having to worry about any of the other side effects.
There you go.
All right. So I wanted to talk about how to translate your WordPress plugin today, because we recently released, and by we, I don't mean me, I mean Steve and William on our dev team released a version of Accessibility Checker and all of our add-ons for Accessibility Checker translated into a bunch of different languages. So should we talk about that?
Yeah, but maybe first we should talk about what inspired us to translate Accessibility Checker and its family of add-ons into multiple languages. Chris, you care to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I'll first talk about it from like the just general, like we're trying to grow a product angle, and then I'll speak to like generally why it's important. But from the growth angle, I've observed over the last maybe 5 or 6 months that increasingly we've seen adoption in Germany, Lithuania, Spain, Austria, Italy, quite a few different EU countries. And I noticed, and Amber noticed, and probably Steve noticed as well, just because we have an activity feed where we can see opt-ins, that Germany was kind of leading the pack in a lot of opt-ins. And that was one where someone, a very gracious and generous volunteer, had actually translated a bunch of the strings in the free version into German. And we were seeing a lot of growth there and just growth in Europe in general. So it seemed to just make sense, like if there was a way for us to get Accessibility Checker into more languages, that with the EU Accessibility Act and everything happening over in Europe, it just made a lot of sense for business reasons. But beyond business reasons, accessibility is, I think we can all agree, a universal issue, regardless of what language your website is in. And anyone who's managing a WordPress website should have tools that they can use and understand that give them accessibility feedback and give them advice on what they can do to find and fix issues. And I think that being able to have Accessibility Checker available in more than just English and maybe partially translated in a couple other languages and actually having it in 30 plus different languages is a huge step forward for accessibility on the WordPress platform and giving people tools that they can use, because translation in WordPress is hard, which I think we'll get into more. But Amber, speaking of translation being hard, how was Accessibility Checker originally being translated? You want to take people through what the translation process is, kind of like by default?
Yeah, with the process in the WordPress project, the way it works is it's volunteer driven. So any plugin or theme that is available for free on WordPress.org can put certain functions or wrappers, which I'm sure Steve can tell us more about from a technical perspective in a minute, around strings. So words or phrases or sentences or paragraphs, whatever, like text that is in the code of their plugin. And that basically opens it up as saying, hey, this is translatable. And then we can throw a link to this where you can look at it and learn more about the process. But volunteers can then go and use a tool on WordPress.org where they see the English string or whatever string it, the native language is. And then they can choose from one of, I don't know, 50 or 60 different languages. And they even have variations, like they have Spanish from Spain, and they have Spanish from the Dominican Republic and Argentinian Spanish. And so they have a lot of different variations for dialects. So you could choose that. And basically it's a web form almost, where on the left is the thing you're translating. And then someone who is a native speaker of that language or a fluent enough speaker of that language can then provide the alternative. And then it gets submitted. And then there are people on the translation team who are approvers, and they can go basically see the translations that existed and approve them. And then they go live and then they're available for your plugin, which is a really great, cool thing that we have communities of volunteers and people who are doing this for free. And maybe before
there's a little caveat on that too. I think you have to get to a certain percentage of translated strings before it actually will generate the language file on your .org plugin page.
They won't release the German version if you only have 2% of your plugin in German.
I think it's 90%. I mean, don't quote me on that, but it's around there. It's a pretty high number. And then once you reach that threshold, you will then see, you know, on the sidebar where it says translated in so many languages, and you can click on it and see those. But
yeah. On that getting set up and like the technical part, what did you have to do in the plugin initially to set it up for translation by WordPress community, Steve?
Yeah. I mean, it's not too difficult on that end if you're doing it through GlotPress, but you basically need to use a text domain inside your plugin. You define that in the plugin definition, and then you use that text domain throughout the plugin in the translation functions. There's just little wrapper functions that you can use. They could either be just a regular wrapper or an escaping wrapper. And then you put your string in there, and then you put your text domain in there.
So I have no idea what you're talking about. What's a text domain? What's the text domain for Accessibility Checker?
It's accessibility-checker.
Oh, okay. So it's just like a slug.
It's a slug.
Okay, so it's like the slug for the plugin that you referenced.
Yeah, so through this process that we went through the last couple of weeks, our text domain actually was EDACT, E-D-A-C, which is Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker. We used to use that as like a prefix, and we actually were trying to standardize our text domains across all of our plugins. So we actually are switching those out to use the actual slug. We actually did switch them out to use a slug. So it is now accessibility-checker. And it's just a string. It's just a slug that you're going to use throughout the plugin inside of these translation functions, these little wrapper functions. You know, it's like double underscore, open parentheses, put your string, comma, your text domain, close parentheses. So what that does is that basically says, this is a string and it is ready to be translated. And it does have a function through which the strings can be replaced with the correct language. So we had to do that. And you kind of have to audit your plugin a little bit to make sure that no strings that need to be translated were missed. You know, through the years, we've actually gone through and made sure with every pull request that our strings are all translated. If there are any that we missed, we go back and clean those up. And then from there, you have to create a POT file. And what a POT file is basically, it's essentially like a spreadsheet, like what Amber was describing on GlotPress, which you can see on the webpage. It's essentially that, but it's a file that has all your strings in it, all your translatable strings. If you don't wrap your strings in these translation functions, they won't be generated through the POT file. And the way you generate a POT file is, and the easiest way to do it is to just use the WP CLI. There are CLI commands that you can run that will generate that POT file for you. So you upload your POT file to GlotPress or in your plugin, and then they're all there. And like Amber said, then you gotta find contributors to help you translate those strings. And sometimes that's quite a bit of a challenge. We were lucky enough to have some help there in the free plugin before we went through this process. But yeah, that's kind of the simple breakdown.
Yeah. So as Steve alluded to, there isn't necessarily just an army of free translators raring to go with every plugin that enables this capability. So what were some of the bigger challenges we encountered with just relying purely on the WordPress core translation process?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one, like Steve said, is volunteers. People have to be willing to do that, even if they're not paid. So it's, do they want to? Are they interested in? I think with Accessibility Checker, it is a very large plugin. We have a lot of language in the admin, you know, whether on different pages, like different phrases here and there, sometimes paragraphs or lists explaining to you how to do something. And so I think at our peak, the best was German, and it was mostly because, we'll shout out to Robert Windisch, who is an amazing human being, but he lives in Germany. He got a bunch of people on the translation team and German translation volunteers to translate our plugin into German. And I think at one point we had 97% coverage in German, which was great. But then, you know, as we're releasing updates, now there's new strings that also have to be translated. So it's almost like somebody would have to monitor that and be like, oh, I need to go translate these now, because I think we went down to like 72, 74% coverage just because we were updating the plugin. We had some in French and some in Dutch, I think, but not enough. Whereas like our very small plugin, Accessibility New Window Warnings, that one has, I don't know, 10 strings or something. It's really easy. So that's been translated into a ton of different languages, and the strings don't really change in that one as frequently because it's so concrete. It doesn't need all these updates. We're not adding massive features to it. So there's the challenge of just getting people in the first place and then getting people to monitor it and continue to want to volunteer for it. But then there's also a challenge of someone has to approve it. So it's not just someone volunteering their time to translate. It's also someone volunteering their time to approve. So one of the frustrations I had was that Paula on our team, who is our content specialist, is a native Spanish speaker. She put hours into translating into Spanish. And if you were to go look more than a year later, those strings are still pending approval. So even though we're like, oh, we have someone that we can pay and her salary and her work to translate the plugin, there's no guarantee that it would ever be released because we have no control over that. And I even went into the translation channel and WordPress Slack and I said, hey, these are here. Can anyone review them? And they're like, there's no one for that language right now. Yeah. I was like, okay. It's just a very frustrating process, I think, that can be challenging if you're a plugin developer and you're trying to figure out how can I make this more accessible. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on the challenge side of it, Steve.
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's definitely the challenge. I mean, I think the people with the level of permissions to approve, I think it's pretty small team these days, and it's been reduced even in the last year or so. So there's just not a lot of people with, you know, commit permissions that can spend a lot of time when you're talking hundreds of strings, right? And they got to speak that language, right? So this is definitely the challenge.
Yeah. So, of course, we figured out a way to get our plugin translated. We're going to talk about that, but we're going to take a short commercial break first.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any plan.
All right, so we are back. We've talked a bunch about the difficulties and the challenges, and we wanted to get it translated and we couldn't. I went to PressConf, which is a conference earlier in the year that is more of a business-focused conference for WordPress folks. And I had a really great conversation with Ben Rittner from Cadence WP. And he told me about something called Private Translation Cloud from WPML that they had been experimenting with at Cadence and their parent company, Stellar WP. So I came back from the conference and I shared that with our team and we decided to test it out. Chris, would I put you on the spot too much to ask you to give a quick overview of what PTC is?
Yeah, I can give a very basic description of what it is. At its most basic, Private Translation Cloud, or PTC, is a combination of AI and a proprietary language model that enables translation of these strings into, I believe, 33 different languages. And there's a whole bunch of them here. Most of them appear to be like European, or I do see like Japanese, Korean. There's a lot, too many for me to read out, but it seems like it's a very robust, and as we've seen, a pretty robust piece of software. So it's basically supposed to automate translation, and they claim, or their tagline that we saw used quite frequently, is better than human translation is what they say.
So I don't know if I believe that, and I don't know that I would promise that, but I mean, it certainly is. And well,
how could you validate that though? If it's better than human, how could we validate if it actually is better than human? As a human,
we wouldn't, because a human would look at it and be like, this looks good.
That's right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How does that work technically, Steve?
Yeah. So this kind of was an interesting one, and that Amber kind of put a bug in my ear about, and I kind of looked at it, and then it sat for a little while, and then I got another bug in my ear about it from Chris.
I'll tell you, and I think most teams are this way too. When you have certain like marketing deadlines
for
different things, and we went to WordCamp Europe, which we've talked about on the podcast, everybody knows that. And for me, on the marketing side, I'm like, this is a deadline. There are things that I would love to see happen before WordCamp Europe, because it makes sense and it might help me while I'm there, you know. Or Black Friday is one that people have a lot as a plugin developer. Yeah.
She wanted some marketing juice, which I get, you know. And to that too, like when it comes up about translations, and this is maybe just a little sidebar though, like when you're like, you know, you're the CTO or like a product owner of a piece of software, right? A lot of times you're playing a juggling game, right? Because there's only so many resources, there's only so many hours in a day, and there's a million features that you want, and everything's fighting for priority, right? And you try to like, we want to do that, right? We want to do these translations, but we've got these features, and these features may, you know, help with profitability, you know, do translations help with profitability? Maybe, but maybe, you know, so you're always playing this game, and it's definitely, things can kind of get put on the back burner for a little while. And what we looked at PTC, this translation software, a little bit to see, hey, can we implement this, you know, fairly quickly? And I will say that it started out as maybe a 2 or 3 day thing that kind of ballooned into about 3 weeks.
Once you dive into stuff, it's never as simple as...
Well, and two, it depends on the complexity of your product. You know, Accessibility Checker is 5 plugins now. And it depends on the complexity of your workflows and your continuous integration and things like that. And at Equalize Digital, we want to do it right. And we want to do it the right way. Where that marketing juice is great, but it, in the backside, it needs to actually do these things. It can't just be like, we translated some things and we're not sure if they really work. So this is an AI tool that translates. We didn't just, okay, we just translated with the AI. There you go. Amber's in Europe. I'm in the United States, and we're working. Hey, we got this. We send it over to Amber. Hey, check it out. You know, and kind of the, you know, like we're going to bed and she's waking up and she's having people read these strings.
Do you think that was the benefit of doing it right before WordCamp Europe?
Yeah.
So our friend Taco, who's from the Netherlands and already has a Dutch website, he looked at all the Dutch for us. I had a friend from Italy look at it, right? Like a bunch of different people looked at some different languages, which was helpful. And I do think that was helpful timing-wise to be because it's a bigger ask to email someone and be like, take some time out of your workday. Then, oh, hey, we're all standing around at a WordCamp chatting. Would you take 5 minutes to read this? You know.
Jumping a little bit into the technical side. So PTC, as like an overview, It's basically what you do is you connect your GitHub repository to it. And you have to have, of course, you have to have a pot file generated by WPCLI on your own. And then it grabs that pot file and it generates the machine file and the .po, which is the actual human readable translation file. And of all those strings, and it'll do it in all the languages that you select. You can choose which languages you want. You can choose which branch of your Git repo it monitors. And it will just do this automatically. And it goes really quick. At first, it has features inside of there where you can actually, just like on GlotPress, like you kind of get this like Excel looking view with the columns, you know, like this is the what's in the pot file, which is an English string, right? And then, you know, this is your translation, and you can actually go through and edit those. So if somebody comes to us and says, you know, this translation in German is kind of weird, we'd be like, well, what is it actually? And we can go into the PTC dashboard and we can edit it there, and it'll always use that even over an AI generated string. So it's not.
That's good to know. I didn't know that. And that was a question I was going to ask you later, which is if people report problems, can we fix them and force the AI to use our correction? And so,
right. Yeah, totally. So it'll always, like, if you edit one of the strings, it'll take yours by priority the next time it auto generates. So there's also a glossary in here, which is really nice for keywords like accessibility checker that we don't want translated. So in the process of going back and making sure all the strings in our plugin are translatable, we're a little overzealous and we translated even our own product names. Brandy. So in here, you can add words like in the glossary, we added accessibility checker. And then in all the languages, they're just English. And then we added equalized digital, and in all the languages, they're English. Even if there was another language where, like, maybe accessibility checker really doesn't make sense, like even as a product name, we actually can modify that on a language by language basis in the glossary. And what this does is I don't have to go back into the plugin, or William doesn't have to go back into the plugin and remove the translation function wrappers. It will just automatically not translate those, or actually it does translate them, but just into what we told them to. And we told them not to translate them to different languages. So in a nutshell, that's kind of how the system works. It's actually pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. I mean, not to show bias to this PTCWPML.org. I did actually just this morning saw that Gravity Kit came out with one called Photomatic. I haven't tried it, but I'm just going to mention it here if you're looking into these kind of AI translations to give it a look. And Automatic looks like it's more of a CLI thing that you could run within your terminal. But mm-hmm. I'll just give a shout out to that.
So there's multiple options. And ours, so you were saying we set it up to monitor, I don't know, like our dev branch. And it goes out and then it submits a PR back to the dev branch in GitHub.
Yep.
So pull request for non-developers, and then you guys can review and approve that. It doesn't just automatically edit your code, which I think is nice.
Yep. It's your friendly little AI translation developer that will just sit there and wait till you put in a pot file with a new string that, and it will translate. So we had 32 languages. So like you're talking, it goes at, you put it in and you're getting a pull request with 64 files in it, right? Every time. and it actually submits each language file as a commit. So if you're a developer chasing stats on GitHub and like it's your account attached to PTC, your commit numbers are going to go through the roof.
So you're telling us that your stats are all fake now.
Yeah. It looks like you're doing a lot.
Well, I was going to say, I bet the number one thing that any like developer or person with a product is going to be thinking immediately is what did all this cost? I mean, they could go to the website, look at the pricing, but I'm wondering in practical sense, like not just like dollars for the platform, but also like general time. If you have a thought of like how much time it took, I would be interested to hear that too.
But it'd be good just to talk about the pricing for people so they don't have to go find out themselves.
So far, our cost with the PTC.WPML.org is zero because we are on a free trial for 30 days. And
I think it's a really generous free trial.
It is a really generous free trial. Yeah, so what I'll say about that a little bit too is actually I think that the free trial, and it doesn't seem to be super limited. We did 5 plugins. thousands of strings. And what I will say is, and we're getting into a little bit of how technical this was to set up, but from our own workflow side, is we needed this kind of sandboxing kind of time to figure this out. And if we were being charged a utilization charge during this time, I think it would have been difficult. Now, I will say that PTC doesn't actually have a utilization charge. They have a flat $30 a month rate, which I actually like. I know with a lot of AI stuff, you know, a lot of its utilization, and that gives me a lot of anxiety to think, you know, every token that I have to count tokens when I'm writing code or, you know, making translations. So a flat $30 a month actually, I think, really works for us.
I think, to be fair, if it had been token-based, we would not have been like, let's do every language. We might have been like, let's do Spanish and French.
Yep.
Pick the biggest languages and let's do those. Because, I mean, you know, we're like a lot of WordPress plugin developers. We're trying to balance a lot of things with costs. And, you know, someday maybe we'll be multimillionaires, but we're not. And so we have to always do that. So that was one reason why when I heard about PTC, I brought it to you because the pricing I thought was really great.
I'm not sure if that's an introductory pricing because my review of the product is it does seem to be like fairly beta-ish. I know it's like fully released, but like we did encounter some bugs here and there. Like we can't really figure out how to delete projects. And then it would like, we'd get into some instances where we would put out a new pot file in a PR and then commit that to the develop branch. And we wouldn't get a PTC PR. And we're like, what's going on? Why isn't this working? And we couldn't figure out how to trigger it. So we actually had to create a new project. And then it would run. Mm-hmm. And then oddly enough, that PR we were waiting for a long time ago comes in like a couple hours later or like a half hour later. Like, so there was some quirkiness with the way it works. It's not 100% perfect right now, but I'm sure, you know, this is a new product. They're working out the bugs and stuff. And it's probably fairly complex what they're doing on their end. So we did encounter some bugs and some quirkiness with it, but I think I would agree that the flat $30 a month is definitely a great value for what it provides.
So what do you think your time cost is? I mean, or yeah, maybe we could say, let's assume somebody's hourly rate is $100 an hour for easy math. What do you think the cost to get it set up on our 5 plugins was, or how many hours do you think you and William put into that?
Let me think. So we started it halfway through the week when you guys were working at EU. We worked on it mostly last week, and then we've released the remaining add-ons earlier this week. So 2 weeks, I would say that maybe 50, 60 hours on it. So if you're talking about $100 an hour, that's a significant $5,000-$6,000 cost, right? Which is a fairly significant cost. Could we have utilized that time to release a feature? Yeah, we totally could have. But going back to the beginning of this conversation, I really think that accessibility and translation are kind of, they go together. And it's, well, if we're making an accessibility checker that is actually accessible itself, then this probably needs to be done. And it's something that's been on our roadmap and that we want to do. We started it. It's time to bite the bullet and just see it through.
Yeah. And speaking of seeing things through, there was also some discussion around strings inside of our accessibility checks where we're checking for particular strings of text and translating those. Do you think that's probably going to be a few dev cycles out? Just to completely put you on the spot after had a roadmap plan meeting literally yesterday.
An example for people who might not know what Chris is talking about is we have a check like ambiguous anchor text that will flag on phrases like click here and we'll say, hey, your language sucks. But historically, it only did English. It wouldn't do whatever the equivalent is in Spanish or French or German or Dutch or whatever. So that's what we're wondering.
Yeah. So there's some thought that has to go into how that gets implemented. So we, on the Global Accessibility Awareness Day, William and I kind of worked through that day and we created a plugin for adding play and pause buttons to animated GIFs and to make those strings translatable in that plugin. We actually have settings where you can define what those should be. In the plugin, if we take the translation at face, right? Like, I can't validate Korean, right? Like, that Korean string is correct. Like, I don't know what click here is in Korean. So what we would be doing at that point is we would be taking the translation at face and just validating it against itself. If the string on the website equals the translation, then it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
But if that translation is off by any character or any phrasing, and it actually doesn't match what most people in that language use as click here, then it won't flag. So that's where it gets really difficult, because that's where you have to trust the translation 100%, because you're actually doing a comparison on it. So you got to ask yourself, is this going to prevent more false positives or more false negatives? And is it better to actually expose those strings as a setting to the user and let them define what they are?
Yeah. So we've talked about this, maybe adding a field that allows you to say, what are phrases you want to flag? And that is an interesting thing with translation. When I was having people look at it, one of the feedback pieces that Taco gave me about some of our CTAs in the free plugin, in English, we frequently use the phrase like get accessibility checker on a link or a button styled link to be like, go get it, go buy it. But he's like, in Dutch, the way that translates, it sounds click here to get Accessibility Checker Pro for free.
Oh.
Because he says they just would never say get it to them means I'm going to give it to you. Mm. Not you can go out and acquire it, if that makes sense. And so I think that's an interesting thing too with this whole translation, is that with some of the people, like some of the things they flagged, they're like, this isn't totally wrong, but it just doesn't make sense, like in a dialect. Like I think you're saying, like click here, there might be another dialect thing that we don't know, which is interesting too, like thinking about readability and all that, like as part of accessibility, which is why I think a lot of this ties into us making our own tool more accessible.
I do want to jump back a little bit and cover something we have listed in our notes here about challenges that occurred. And this will kind of speak a little bit to why it took so much time to kind of implement this. And I think it's good for if there's any developers or, you know, product managers listening to kind of understand what you're getting into a little bit when you move into translations like this. So one, your plugin has to be translatable. Two, it has to be translatable in PHP and JavaScript. Translating in PHP is super easy. Translating in JavaScript is not super easy and very difficult. So we ran into issues with even in Webpack. It's what we use to compile all of our scripts and assets. So we ran into issues with where our JavaScript strings were not translating and we just couldn't figure it out. And actually, if we're using template literals in JavaScript, which basically is, you know, you do like a dollar sign and open parentheses, and then you put a string, and then you can actually put in variables into that string without having to use concatenation. With a template literal, you can just do this all in one string. Well, none of those were being translated. And actually what's happening is our compiler was actually breaking all the translation functions. So we actually had to modify how all of our plugins get compiled and make sure that works properly. So for our workflow, when we make code changes, right, and you submit it up as a PR to the develop branch, right, and the develop branch is what's being watched for the translations, well, you need a POT file, and the POT file has to be generated in WP CLI. Well, that means you got to roll up a whole WordPress instance, run the command, and generate the POT file, commit the POT file up. It's a lot of stuff when you have in your workflow. And actually, when you have manual steps like that in your workflow, we found that developers just won't do it, or they'll forget about it. A new developer will come in and not know it or not read the docs, you know, things like that. So we actually created a workflow in GitHub. So anytime a PR gets submitted to the develop branch, it actually will run a workflow that actually rolls up, you know, in a container in GitHub, it'll actually roll up the instance WP CLI. It'll generate the pot file and it'll commit it to that PR. And it'll also, you also have to generate JSON files. So just like you have your machine file, your .mo file and your .po file that get generated, you also have JSON files, which are used for translating in JavaScript. So that CLI script that we have actually generates those as well. PTC will generate JSON files for you, but they're not in a format that WordPress recognizes.
I'm sorry. I thought JSON was one format. There's WordPress JSON and there's other JSON.
Well, JSON can be formatted in any way you want to format it. It's a whole tree of information that can be formatted in any way you want. So we actually are generating those ourselves.
I don't remember this. PTC is just targeted at any software developer. It's not WordPress specific. Like they're not trying to market it for WordPress plugins.
No, they are. They're marketing it for a whole slew of software products, but WordPress is one of them in there.
Yeah, it's just interesting to think like their JSON's not WordPress format. But it's probably why, if they're not specifically only doing it for WordPress.
Right. And, you know, maybe that's something that they're working towards, or maybe there's a flag or something we have to put in somewhere to tell it to give us the JSON files in a certain format. But we were able through our GitHub workflow to generate those ourselves. And then beyond that, so now we have an automated continuous integration workflow, right? The developer really has to do nothing but properly translate their strings, which is just put the wrapper function around them. And then it'll automatically do it. So any of our plugins that get new strings, the stuff all runs, because you really don't want this stuff to get stale as you move along in your project. And then I think the final piece is distribution, right? Just so we have distribution scripts in all of our plugins that we run. And you really don't want to package all of these files because it makes the file size huge, makes your packet size huge. We had to modify our dist scripts and stuff to actually only package in the JSON and the machine file, which is very small. I mean, with 32 languages, you're going to have lots of files in there.
Yeah, it's every language times four files or three files or something.
Yeah, if you were to include them all, but if you actually just pluck out, write a distribution script that plucks out what you actually need in your distribution, then you can keep that file size down. And so it was definitely a very challenging process. I think we learned a lot, and we actually, along the way, the development team, we were actually kind of telling ourselves like, wow, this is amazing how hard this is. No wonder plugins don't get translated, because it's actually very difficult.
Yeah. Beyond even having a human translator.
Totally.
Well, so I think we would all probably agree, obviously, because we did it, that it was worth the effort. I know from a marketing standpoint, I'm going to be watching to see if we have increased sales. Because I don't know, were we getting more in Germany because that was already translated? Like, so it'll be interesting to see. Do we get a lot more French purchases now? I don't know. But just maybe to wrap us up, what do we think would be good for devs to do if they want to start with translation? Should they just go out and try this, or maybe get some of that setup that you were talking about, Steve? Like, if they aren't on GitHub, you need to get on GitHub. You need to figure out like what an automated workflow is. What's the first step for somebody?
Yeah. So rewind the podcast episode back to the beginning and just do all the things we just talked about.
All right, then.
I think if I can just say one thing before you dive into the technical side, Steve, I think it's important to pay attention to what your customers are telling you and where you see them coming in from and where you see interest growing, because that can be a leading indicator on whether translation should be a priority for you or not. It also, I think, is somewhat product dependent. So depending on what kind of product you have and what it's intended to do probably matters a lot.
Yeah, I'm always thinking about the minimal effort for the maximum outcome, right? In software development, particularly because, you know, like I've stated, we're all limited on time and resources. And I think if you're a WordPress developer, there's a high likelihood that the majority of your plugin is PHP based. So look into the proper translation functions to use inside your plugin And even if you don't have any translation, just start adding those. Even though it won't be translated, you're making it translatable. So when it does, yeah, so when it does come up, it's not a shock to the system, and you've got thousands of lines of code to go through and figure out what needs to be translated. If you have your plugin on WordPress.org, I would consider going that route and making your plugin translation ready by making sure you get it up on GlotPress and that you have a pot file and that you have those strings translated, and maybe reach out to people in the community on that team and see if you can maybe nudge them to help you get some of these strings translated. It's just like with accessibility, it takes a little bit of reframing your mindset around it and the importance of it. And I think, you know, it, sometimes you just think that everybody speaks your language, or everybody, you know, and I know Americans are probably really bad at this, right?
We're the worst about this, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just speak
yeah.
English to me. Thank you.
Yeah, just speak English. And really, we can go to Europe and most people speak English. Even in non-English speaking European countries, they're a lot of times taught English as a second language. And so you could just say, well, everybody speaks English, they should just learn to speak English, which is kind of not cool and a little bit of ignorant to even think that way, right? So it's just a little bit of reframing your mindset around it being important. And I would say just make those strings translatable, and that will get you miles ahead.
Well, I think that is a great note to wrap up on. So thanks everybody for tuning in, and feel free to reach out if you have any questions, and we'll see you back here in 2 weeks for another conversation. Bye.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.